Let's see. I had to eat a little candy to perk myself up because my allergies are bothering me too. Okay. Most of this talk is about quantum physics. And all the mathematics is very simple. But I'm going to start with something just pure mathematics. Absolutely pure, utterly simple mathematics. Look at this table. Table one. Four columns, A, B, C, and D. And a lot of rows. M rows, where M is a big number. A million, whatever. Okay. In each entry, in each column, in each row, put either a plus or a minus 1 any way you want. I don't care how. Any way you want. Later on, I will talk about a specific choice of that table arising out of a physics question. Okay? But for right now, any old table. Now, over here is table 2. And this is just the products. So where'd that minus 1 come from? We will pause. Obviously, the bus just pulled up. We have Schrodinger's equation here. Come. I am curious, are these all math people or do we have physics people sneaking in? What?
Can I sit here?
Why not? There's an empty over there. Can you sneak in there?
Yeah, I'll sit
down there. All right. Didn't know I was so popular. Okay, so once again, most of it's going to be quantum physics, but this is a pure math. The very first thing I'm going to do is pure mathematics, and very, very simple. A table, table one. Four columns, A, B, C, and D. Lots of rows, M. M is a big number. Fill in every entry, under each column, a plus or a minus 1, any old way you want. I don't care how. Later on, I'll talk about a special case of table 1, arising from the question we're looking at. From table 1, build table 2. And this is just going to be the products column. So there's the AC product. So where'd that minus 1 come from? Well, it's in the first row. So I go to the first row here, and the A is a plus 1, and the C is a minus 1. And plus 1 times minus 1 gives me a minus 1. So everybody see how this table's filled out. Once you have this table, you can utterly, trivially fill out this table. Okay? Let K be the average of all the numbers in this table, in table 2. Okay? I'm now going to show you Bell's theorem. The mathematical Bell's theorem. Okay? And it is an utterly trivial theorem. It says that no matter how you fill up table 1, that table 2, I'm supposed to be able to see somewhere what you're seeing. Well, there it is. Well, can you see that okay? The claim is, the last line should say the claim is proven. All right, good. Excellent. So now I know where to put it. It says no matter how you fill in table 1, and then use table 1 to get table 2, and then find that average is bound to be between minus a half and plus a half. Utterly trivial piece of mathematics. Let me show you why it works. What's the average of a bunch of numbers? You add up all the numbers and divide by the number of numbers. Okay, how many numbers do we have? We have four columns and M rows, so we have four times M numbers. When I add them together, let's say that the sum of all the numbers in this table is capital S for sum, okay? So K is simply the sum divided by the number of numbers. S divided by 4M, right? Now, I claim every row in table 2 adds up to either plus 2 or minus 2. Look at the first row. Adds up to minus 2. The second row adds up to plus 2, and so on, okay? Why is the claim true? Trivial. There's a row, the AC column, the AD column, BC column, plus the minus, notice the minus sign there, the minus BD column, which I can rewrite that way. Now, every number in sight is either a plus 1 or a minus 1. So C is either the same as D or C is the negative of D. Look at the case that C is the negative of D. Then that factor, the C is the negative of D, that factor becomes 0. This term goes away. I'm just left with that term. And I get D, yeah, minus D is the same as C, so I just get this. But B and C are both plus or minus 1, so I get plus or minus 2. And the other case is the same. So every row is plus or minus 2. Okay, let's talk about S. We want to talk about S, the sum of all the numbers. If I want to add up all the numbers in this table, I'm going to do it efficiently. I'm going to add up all the numbers in the first row, then add up all the numbers in the second row, and so on, and then take all the row sums. And that will give me, add up all them, and that will give me S. Okay? What's the biggest S could be? Well, remember, every row is at most plus 2. So to make S as big as possible, that would be the case where every row added up to plus 2. And so in that case, S would be plus 2 times M. Okay? What's the smallest S could be? Well, that's the case when every row adds up to minus 2. In that case, S is minus 2 M. So S is between those two bounds. I divide through by 4M, I get this. But remember, that was just our K. And I have proven Bell's theorem. That's all there is to it, okay? That's all there is to it. And yet, he knew that if you applied that to a certain choice of table 1, you could learn something profound about reality. So, now we get into that. The question I really want to talk about is, does chance exist in reality? Well, that leads to a question. What do I mean by chance? Yeah? Look it up in a dictionary. You'll find half a dozen different definitions. They're all very vague. I'm going to give you my working definition here. I'm going to say the outcome of an experiment is due to chance if there is no way of knowing what the outcome is going to be unless you actually do the experiment. Okay? Not even Mother Nature can know. I'm not saying that we humans don't know. It's unknowable. You have to do the experiment to find the answer. Let's do an example of something that looks like chance but isn't. Flipping a coin. Looks like chance. Flip a coin 1,000 times, half her heads, half her tails. Looks very random. It's a good imitation of chance. It's a very good imitation. But if you look at it carefully, you realize, hey, it's determined. If you knew the exact weight of the coin, the exact dimensions, exactly how far under you put your thumb, the angle you held it at, how hard you flipped, maybe things like air currents, if you knew all that stuff precisely enough, you could know which way the coin was going to come out without even bothering to do the flip. Okay? That's the crucial point. You have to do the experiment. And with a coin flip, the answer is no. Despite the fact that it mimics chance, but it's not real chance. So are there any cases of real chance in the world? Well, you quickly realize if you're going to hope to find one, you have to go to quantum physics. So let's go to quantum physics. Easiest case. I'm going to talk about the polarization of photons of light. So photons are polarized. The easiest kind of polarization is linear. There's more complicated ones like circular, but we don't need them. So to say a photon is polarized at 45 degrees means that its electric field oscillates back and forth in a plane 45 degrees to the horizontal. It goes like this. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Except it goes a lot faster, and you've got to listen very hard to hear the ya-da-da-da sound. Well, that was a joke. You can laugh. It's okay. All right. Now, here I have a Polaroid filter. You probably have one too. This is oriented at 90 degrees. It's a vertical filter. That means a vertical polarized photon, when it polarized at 90 degrees, passes right through this. A horizontal one hits and bounces back. What about one at 45 degrees? Comes in. Does it pass through or does it bounce back? Well, experiments, and I'm going to quote a number of experiments, and they've all been done and verified. They're all true. It turns out that half of them pass through and half bounce back. And furthermore, it appears to be chance. We humans have never figured out any way of saying, oh, that one's going to get through, but that one's going to bounce back. So the question is it really chance, or is it like the coin flip? Something that mimics chance, but there's actually a hidden mechanism that determines the answer. Okay? And maybe it's very well hidden. Maybe we humans will never find it, but maybe Mother Nature knows what it is. Okay? Einstein took that latter view. He did not believe in chance. His famous quote was, God does not play dice. So he felt that there was some mechanism. Now, he knew that his belief did not constitute proof. You know, even a lot of well-educated people make the mistake of thinking, I believe this, so it's got to be true. You know, when you get well enough educated, you realize that, no, that's not necessarily so. He knew that. So he and a couple of other guys came up with something called the EPR argument that gave what they thought was a proof based on a certain experiment, and I'll explain that experiment and their argument later on. Okay? And he felt that that justified his belief that there is a hidden mechanism. Then John Stuart Bell came along and did a deeper argument that convinced most physicists that Einstein was wrong, that the outcome is really just up to chance. Okay? So I don't forget it. That leads to the interesting question, how does chance work? It can't flip a coin, because that's determined. It can't roll dice or spin your roulette wheel. How does chance work? I believe that that is a question we are unable to answer. That there is no mechanism, that chance is chance, and that is simply a basic part of the fabric of reality. And we have to accept it as one of the fundamental starting points of our understanding of the world. Okay, now, I'm going to talk about arbitrary angles, an angle gamma. I'm going to take my filter and rotate it to angle gamma. That means a photon polarized at angle gamma passes through, one horizontal to that, perpendicular to that, bounces back. And I'm going to assume that my filters come with a register. So if the photon gets through, it registers as a plus one. If it bounces back, it registers as a minus one. So getting through is plus one, is red as plus one, bouncing back is red as minus one. Now, I need some notation. All the notation I'm going to show you here is very easy. One qubit state. The word qubit comes from quantum computing, and in that subject you can use a photon to be a qubit if you want. So I'm going to use qubits and photons interchangeably. I'm going to use this expression to denote what is called the polarization state, or just the state of a photon polarized at angle gamma. And for short, S sub gamma. S for state, gamma for the angle. Right? Notice that those coefficients satisfy that equation. So in general, any expression of this form, where x and y are real numbers, where x squared plus y squared equals 1, will represent the state of some photon polarized at some appropriate angle gamma. And these are called one-qubit states because they only have one photon. Pretty soon we're going to go to two photons and two-qubit states. Now remember, I talked about this photon and one perpendicular to it. I need to talk about perpendicular states. So I take my gamma, I add 90 degrees to it. That makes it perpendicular. And trig identities say this is the same as this and this is the same as this. So the shorthand way is if S sub gamma has that form, then S sub gamma perp has that form. Okay, very easy to memorize, but I'll remind you of it when we need it. Okay, everybody happy? All right. Now, here's a question I want to ask. I have this filter at angle gamma. Along comes a photon polarized at angle theta. Does it pass through or does it bounce back? Or sometimes one and sometimes the other? Well, is it read as plus one or minus one? Here is what experiments show us. Experimentally verified fact. Capital P is always going to represent a probability. You can usually guess what? So the probability of it being read as plus one, as passing through, is given by the cosine squared of gamma minus theta. I remind you, gamma is the angle of the filter, theta is the angle of the photon. Okay? And the probability that bounces back is given by that. And notice those two probabilities add up to one, which tells us one or the other happens. Okay? This is a very nice fact. It is not a mathematical fact. It's a fact of physics expressed in the mathematical language, that wonderful mathematical language. However, when we go to two photons, this expression of the answer will not suffice. We're going to need to rewrite it a little bit. So here is a very easy bit of notation here. It's something you already know, just in a maybe slightly different form. You may or may not have seen this before. Okay, I've got real numbers A, B, C, and D. And this symbol, the pointy bracket symbol with that vertical bar, that expression, simply means A times C plus B times D. Hey, that looks just like the dot product of those two vectors. Okay. It is. Except technically it's called the inner product, and these quantum physicists use that pointy brackets notation. Okay. Now, there's our S. Let's take the inner product, the dot product of S sub gamma and S sub theta. S sub gamma was that expression. S sub theta is that expression. I use the dot product, the inner product rule. I get this. I use another trig identity, well-known trig identity. I get this. So this cosine is the same number as that inner product. Remember we had this rule? I can rewrite it this way. So I'm rewriting it using the inner product notation. And this one turns out to be that. Notice the gamma, the perp there. Okay, the plus one does not have the perp. The minus one does have the perp. Okay, and the question we are asking is, these are the probability rules, the one qubit probability rules. And we are asking, are they true by chance or by some hidden mechanism? Two qubits, two photons. A symbol of that form, an expression of that form, that is called the tensor product. You treat it like a symbol. W, X, Y, and Z are real numbers, and I demand that that be true. If it is true, I will call this a two-qubit state. Now, I've told you what a one-qubit state represented. A one-qubit state represented a photon polarized at a certain angle. So what does a two-qubit state represent? I'm going to tell you, but I'm going to need to sneak up on it. It's probably the hardest part of this talk, understanding what a two-qubit state represents. So I'm going to sneak up on that. But first, an easy lemma. Suppose S sub lambda is a one-qubit state, and S sub rho is another one-qubit state, and I nicknamed them this way. I shorthand this as this, and this as this. So the E, F, G, and H are just going to represent these signs and cosines. We'll use that later. I'll remind you of it later. The E, F, G, and H are just certain signs and cosines. Here's a definition. By the tensor product of this one-qubit state and this one-qubit state, I mean this expression. That's an easy expression to memorize, actually. For instance, look at that term, the V tensor H term. Where'd that coefficient come from? Well, there's my V with that little f, and there's my H with that little g. So you see where that coefficient came from. Okay. So memorizing the rule for tensor products is trivial. But you don't have to, because I'll remind you when we need it. Okay? But it's very simple. No hard mathematics here. And the conclusion of my lemma is this thing will turn out to be a two-qubit state. If I start with two one-qubit states and take their tensor product, the claim is I end up with a two-qubit state. What does that mean? That means I need to show that this is true for these coefficients. I need to show that this equals one. That's the definition of a two-qubit state. Well, high school algebra gets me from here to here. And look, g squared plus h squared. Hey, there's my g and there's my h, so g squared plus h squared is just 1. I get to here. I get to e squared plus f squared. Oh, but there, e squared plus f squared, that's also just 1. So I have this. I got a two-qubit state. Okay? Two-qubit states of that form, the tensor product of two one-qubit states, are called product states. Pretty soon we will see that there are other two-qubit states besides product states. Okay, my inner product notation, my dot product notation, I talked about it for one qubit states. I just now expanded to two qubit states. So if I'm talking about that inner product, where omega is that expression and delta is that expression, I just take the dot product like before. It's P times W plus Q times X and so on. I've just expanded my inner product up to two qubits. Okay. Now, finally, an experiment. I'm going to explain let's look at this experiment. I can do it here. Where do I have it here? Okay, I've got it written down here. Can people over there see? I didn't do this well. I'll show it up here. Those of you on this side of the class can look there. I have a central source of pairs of photons. I'm going to start talking about pairs of photons, a left photon and a right photon. Now, in this talk, left will always mean my left. So there's left and there's right. There's left and there's right, okay? There's left and there's right, okay? Because otherwise I'll get confused, because sometimes I'll be facing this way and this way. And you're smarter, you're younger and smarter than I am. So my left and my right is the rule. Okay, here's a central source shooting out pairs of photons, a first pair, a second pair, a third pair, a fourth pair. All the left photons fly over here, and they hit a filter, I'm calling it the L, because it's on the left. And it's at angle lambda on the left, okay? On the right, there's this filter I'm calling R at angle rho for right, okay? And an important point here is that this lambda and rho can be arbitrary. You can pick them any way you want. In fact, what you should do is have one choice, lambda here and rho here, and then run the experiment again with lambda here and rho here, and again with lambda here and rho here, and run it lots of times with lots and lots and lots of choices of lambda and rho. And for each choice, make a table, table zero. For now, ignore that third column. We'll get to that later. This is probably self-explanatory. Look at the first pair of photons. And the left photon hits filter L. And let's see, there's a minus one there. That tells me it bounced back. It was read as a minus one. The right photon in the first pair hit here, and there's a plus one there. That tells me, oh, it passed through. It got read as a plus one. Okay? So everybody see how I filled in this table zero? Okay, good. Now, and again, lots of rows on here, because I'm going to use probability, which means I need a lot of trials to have my probability be reliable. Okay, another probability. Capital P is a probability. Plus one on the left, minus one on the right. Oh, that's probably self-explanatory. What are the odds of having the left photon read as plus one at the same time the right photon in the same pair read as minus one? Okay. How can you figure that out? Trivial. Once you have this table, you go through and you count how many rows have that. Let's see, it happens there in the second row, and it happens down here in this row, and maybe lots of other times in between. So you count the number of times you have that, and you divide by the total number of rows, and that gives you this number, that probability. Okay? And same with these other three probabilities, and defined analogously. So figuring out those probabilities is easy via experiment. Now, I'm going to tell you a fact. Suppose, pick two angles. Let's say angle alpha on the left and angle beta on the right. And suppose this central source is such that every left photon happens to be polarized at angle alpha. And every right photon happens to be polarized at angle beta. Okay? Alpha, beta, alpha, beta, alpha, beta, alpha, beta. Okay? If I do that, if that's the kind of source I have in my experiment, wherever my experiment was, there was my experiment. If this source has that property, all the left ones photons are at angle alpha and all the right photons are at angle beta, then here is a true fact. Four true facts, actually. These four equations will hold. I already told you how to find that probability experimentally. I just described it a moment ago. Okay? Count the number of rows that are appropriate and divide by the total number of rows. But the experiment shows it also equals this number. And this number is an easy high school math calculation. You remember what S sub lambda was, you know what S sub rho is, you know how to find the perp. You can find that tensor product, that one. You can find the inner product, the dot product. You can square. Easy high school mathematics. And experiments show it ends up equaling that. No matter what lambda and rho. Oh, if you change your mind about lambda and rho, you will change the number on this side, but you'll also change that probability because you'll have a new experiment with two new filters, and that probability will change. I remind you, there were the 1-qubit probability rules. Here are the 2-qubit probability rules. And you can probably guess what the 3-qubit probability rules are, but we don't need them. Okay, and because these four rules hold, these four equations hold for any choice of lambda rho, I will say that my pair of photons are in that state. Okay, so that's what I mean to say that my pair of photons are in this state. I mean when I put that tensor product over here and put these things over here, these probability rules hold. Okay? That's my definition of saying my pair of photons are in that state. I'm going to rewrite that now and give this the nickname delta. So I'm just going to replace all these with my delta, and it ends up looking like this. Is that legible? Okay, yeah. And again, I reiterate, if these four equations all hold for any choice of lambda and rho, then I say the pair of photons I have is in the 2-qubit state delta. That's my definition of what a two-qubit state represents. It represents a pairs of photons making these probability rules work. That's the definition. Okay? All right. Now, what if delta is not a product state? What if delta does not look like any of those? Can I find a pair of photons making these four rules work when delta is something that does not look like that? Because remember, if the left photons are polarized at angle alpha and the right ones are polarized at angle beta, then as a pair, we saw that they are in this state. So how could I possibly get something that looks like that? In particular, and I'll come back to this in just a moment here, in particular, from the rest of this talk, delta is going to represent that expression, that two-qubit state. It really is a two-qubit state. I've shorthanded it. I've left out the middle terms, which have zero coefficients. And how do I know that's a two-qubit state? Well, I simply, use the rule. I square all the coefficients, I add them together, I get one. Yes, it's a two-qubit state. So the question is, if I were to take this for my delta and plug it into here, can I find pairs of photons making these four probability equations work when I do the experiment that I described earlier? That's the question. Physicists asked themselves that question, and they had to work hard to answer it. It took them a long time to get the answer. And they finally realized that, yes, they could. They can go to a lab and create pairs of photons in this special state delta, this one here. In fact, in any two-qubit state, you can go to a lab and produce pairs of photons in that state. So how is that possible in view of what we saw earlier, where this photon's at angle alpha and this one's at angle beta, as a pair, they're in the product state? And yet this is not a product state. By the way, non-product states are called entangled states. And such pairs of photons are called entangled photons. Well, and I leave to you the exercise, by the way, that this delta up here is not a product state. High school algebra. Okay, go home and show that you can never write this thing as that tensor product. Easy, easy high school algebra problem. So let's see what's going on. How can I do this? Here's what I want to do. We go back to our experiment. There was our experimental setup, except now our central source is giving me pairs of photons, every pair in this entangled state delta. Okay? Let's find this probability, which by definition must equal that. Remember, that's the definition of what it means to say that my pairs of photons are in the state delta. It means that this equation and three of its cousins are all true. Okay? And experimentally, you can do this. You can find such pairs of photons. Okay, so let's actually do this mathematics just to remind you how easy it was. There's S sub lambda, which I shorthand this way. There's S sub rho, which I shorthand this way. S sub rho perp, remember, it was just that. That's how I got from S sub rho to S sub rho perp, by that. There's the tensor product, and there's the answer. Believe me, I did it correctly, but you can double-check me if you want. Okay. And remember, our lemma said, since this is a one-product state, a one-qubit state, and this is a one-qubit state, this must be a two-qubit state. We already saw that lemma. So I know that this is true about those coefficients. And I'm going to use that, yes. Thank you. This is aligned, really. But in any case, because I got a tensor product of two one-qubit states, I know this is a two-qubit state by our earlier lemma, so I know that this equation is true. And I'm going to use that in about 2 minutes. Okay. So, finishing up our thing here, we are working on this probability, which we know equals that. And we already figured out this tensor product. There it was. And that delta is over here. I use my dot product formula, and I get this because the middle two terms there are zero, meaning they have zero coefficients. I can ignore those two things. I get this. High school algebra gets me to this. A very easy rule. Similarly, I just did this one for you and got that answer. This one turns out to be the same. And these two are also equal to each other, and they both equal that.
Okay.
All right. Now, I'm going to now find P of L equals 1, the probability that the left-hand photon is read as a plus 1. Okay. Let's find that. In other words, back in my, here's my table, you can see it. What's the probability that there will be a plus 1 in that left-hand column? Okay. That's what I'm going to find right now. So, there's two ways that can happen. It can happen this way or this way. The left is plus 1 and the right is plus 1, or the left is plus 1 and the right is minus 1. And there's no overlap. So simple probability tells me this probability equals those two probabilities. But I remind you, we just saw, I'm really adding this and this together. So I want to add those two things together. So I do it. That and that equals that plus that. And by high school algebra, I get down to here. And remember, we just saw a moment ago that that equals 1. I get 1/2. That says the left photon has a 50-50 chance of getting through the left filter, no matter what angle that left filter is at. What that means is that left-hand photon has no polarization of its own. Because if it was polarized at angle alpha, it would definitely get through filter angle alpha and definitely not get through filter perpendicular to this. Okay? So I lied when I said photons are polarized. I misled you. Sometimes they're not individually polarized. Okay? It turns out when you have entangled photons, neither one has an individual polarization. You can only talk about their pairwise two-qubit polarization. It's this weird thing. As I say, it took physicists a goodly number of years to kind of figure this all out. Okay. Onward here through the frogs. Let's now find... Oh, that's all right. Let me pick that up before I lose it. Let's now find the probability that the left and the right give the same answer. They're both plus one or they're both minus one. And also the probability that the left times the right equals minus 1. That means, remember that third column? For those of you who can see it over here, I had L, the R, L column, the R column, and then the L times R column. I'm going to start talking about the L times R column. These two probabilities... can you see that? Where is that? There we are. These two probabilities are equal. After all, L and R are both plus or minus 1. How can I get a plus 1? Must have either plus 1 times plus 1 or minus 1 times minus 1. So the only way that this equation can be true is to have this equation be true. So these two probabilities are equal to each other. Okay, so there they are, just reiterated, they're equal to each other. And this one, how can it happen? Well, it can happen that way or it can happen that way. And there's no overlap. So this probability is the sum of those two. And I remind you, those are those two. They're equal to each other. They're both that. So when I add them together, I simply get twice this. I simply throw away that 1/2. And I get, there it is, without the 1/2. Okay? Remember, the E, F, G, and H, they were certain sines and cosines. I filled them back in for you. And now I use that trick I did. We used it before. I'm using it again. So the probability that these two probabilities are equal to each other and they're both equal to that, I remind you, lambda is the angle of the filter on the left. Rho is the angle of the filter on the right. Okay? Take their difference, take the cosine, square it, and that gives you the probability that the two columns have equal answers. And, of course, these two probabilities, by the similar argument, are equal to that sine squared. Okay? Now, I'm going to digress and tell you Einstein's argument, the EPR argument. Okay? Einstein said, think about the case where the two angles, lambda and rho, are equal. The two filters are at equal angles. I don't care what. Make them equal. So lambda minus rho is 0. So this probability, which is that, is going to be the cosine squared of 0, which is going to be 1. That says whatever you get on the left, you're going to get the same answer on the right. If this one's a plus 1, this one's a plus 1. If this one's a minus 1, this one's a minus 1. Now, here's the magic. Turns out these two filters can be arbitrarily far apart. In theory, light years apart. Opposite ends of the universe. in actual experiments, and these experiments have been done, they now have it, I forget, something like 50 or 100 miles apart. Okay? And yet we have perfect coordination, perfect 100% correlation between the two answers. Einstein said, how can that happen? He said, it can't be that each one makes a last-minute decision and they communicate with each other. This one says, I think I'll go through and be a plus one. Hey, Charlie, I'm going to be a plus one. You better be a plus one too. Okay, Mike. Because they're too far apart. It would take that message, even traveling at the speed of light, too long to reach this guy. Because they're making their decisions at the same time. So it can't be a last-minute decision with communication between them. Cell phones are not the answer. Okay? So he said, there's got to be some hidden mechanism. They both carry some variables with them, some information with them that determine the answer, and they carry identical information, hence they give identical answers. Maybe this. Maybe when they're first created, they say, let's both be plus ones. Okay? And they remember that. And maybe that's the hidden variable that Einstein believed existed. The analogy, a good analogy, is human identical twins. Take a pair of identical twins, send one to San Francisco, one to New York, then check their gender. This one's female, guess what? That one's female too. And what is the hidden mechanism, the hidden variable? The sex chromosome. Okay? Einstein said there has to be some similar type thing going on. Okay? Good argument. Good argument. Bell convinced people, no, that Einstein was wrong. Okay. How can you do that? How can you show that there's no such hidden variable? That's a hard thing. To show something exists is hard. To show something doesn't exist is even harder. Okay. Most people now believe what Einstein didn't like. He said that has to be spooky action at a distance. Nowadays, most physicists accept, yes, it is spooky action at a distance. Kind of like chance. They accept it as a basic part of the fabric of reality. Okay. It happens. Okay, so how did Bell do his stuff? So that's the end of the digression. Back to the general case here. Lambda and rho are now going to be different again. Or might be equal, but they're going to be arbitrary again. So here is our general case. The third column, the product column. The probability of getting a plus one was given by that. Minus one was given by that. So what's the average? What's the average of all the entries in the third column, the product column? For those of you who can see the product column, it's over here. The left column, the right column, the product column. Okay? What's the average of finding, what's the average of all those plus or minus ones? Well, that's easy. I simply take plus one times the probability of it happening and add to it minus one times the probability of it happening. And I get this. If you don't see that right away, go home and think about it for 3 or 4 minutes, and you'll say, oh yeah, that's the average. Okay? Okay, now, in a moment, I'm going to do a special case. I want to talk about the special case where the filter on the left is, which I called L over there, I'm going to call A. I'm going to change it to A. And the angle lambda on the left is going to be 202.5 degrees. And on the right, the filter is going to be called C. Instead of R, it's going to be called C. And the angle rho is going to be 225 degrees. So lambda minus rho will be minus 22.5 degrees. Minus 22.5 degrees. So in that case, if this here is the filter A, and this is the filter C, and this is the product A times C, then the average of all those numbers in that third column will be given by this, when I plug in those two angles, and here it is down here, that difference was minus 22.5 degrees, that turns out to be the square root of 2 over 2, which is very close to 0.707. And this experiment has been done. Okay? When you do this experiment, the average of all those things in that AC column is 0.707, very close to it. Okay, now, Bell's experiment. Here it is written up here. I'll show you also on the screen. I have a central source. They're all it's producing pairs of photons, all in the special entangled state delta. And over here on the left, there's two filters, A and B, and on the right, there's two filters, C and D. And here they switch. And what the switch does is when one of the left photons hits it, it either sends it up here to A, to filter A, or down here to filter B. At random. Half of them go up here, half go down here. And on the right, this switch sends half of them up here and half down here at random. So I got four choices. I can do AC, AD, BC, or BD. And each choice will occur roughly one-fourth of the time at random. Okay? All right. Here is my crucial question. Remember with the coin, we've convinced ourselves that, no, you don't actually have to do the experiment. You don't actually have to flip the coin. If you knew enough details about what was going on, you would know what the answer was without doing the work of flipping the coin. So here's my crucial question. Suppose in the first run of my experiment, the first left photon is sent up here to A and gives some answer, like plus one. It did not go down to B. It did not go down to B. What would have happened if it had gone to B? It didn't. But let's ask the question, what would it have done if it had gone to B? And the question is, can we answer that question? Can we know what it would have done? It didn't do it. But can we know what it would have done? Is there any way of knowing what it would have done if it had gone to B instead of A? Understand the question? And even if we humans can't, can Mother Nature know? Does Mother Nature have some secret way of knowing? Einstein felt the answer was yes. Einstein felt the answer was yes. But Bell showed that he was wrong. So let's assume that Einstein was right. If Einstein was right, supposing Einstein's right, that Mother Nature knows the answer to our what-if questions. I'm going to take this to be Mother Nature's secret what if table. In reality, it went to the first left photon went through filter A and gave a plus one. It did not go to B. We humans have to fill in a question mark there because we don't know what it would have done when it went to B. But Einstein said, but Mother Nature knows. Maybe, for instance, it would have been a minus one. And everybody understand with this table, this is Mother Nature. We can figure out if the first left photon went to A and gave a plus one, we can fill that in. And if the right photon went through D and gave a minus one, we can fill that in. But we have to put two question marks here. Because we don't know what they did because the photons didn't hit them. Einstein felt that Mother Nature knows that Mother Nature can fill in this table. Okay? So, pretend that table exists. From that table, we get this table. K is the average of all the numbers in this table. What do I know about K? I know Bell's theorem. Must be true, because that's true no matter what table one I start with. Simple, simple, simple-minded mathematics. On the other hand, what can we fill in? We can fill in. In every row, we can fill in two of the answers. The left photon hit A and gave us this. The right photon, we don't know. We have to put a question mark here. This one, we don't know, but that one, we get a minus one because we saw it happening. In the next row, maybe the left photon hit B and gave a minus one, which means it didn't hit A. We got to put in a question mark there. And maybe the right photon hit D and gave us this answer. We don't know what happened here. We got to put a question mark there. Okay? So we have a partial table one. Half the entries filled in, half question marks. What do we get from our partial table one? We get a partial table two. Let's see. A times C plus one times question mark. Question mark. Plus one times minus one. Minus one. Question mark times question mark. Question mark. Question mark times question mark. Question mark. So we get one answer in this top row and the three question marks. Same with all these rows. But I remind you, one-fourth of the time, what do I have here? I've got the, which one do I have? I got the AD, okay? And that came because the first left photon hit A and the first right photon hit D. And that allowed me to fill in the AD column. How often will that happen? The left goes to A and the right goes to D. It's going to happen roughly 1/4 of the time by these random switching mechanisms. So I'm going to end up with my partial table, and in the AD column, I will 1/4 of the entries in this column will be answers, and the rest will be question marks. But I got a random sampling. Now, had I been clever, I would have made it the AC column. Okay. Let me go back and make the AC column. Suppose this is one we answer, and the rest are question marks. Okay. 1/4 of the time, I will have an answer in the AC column. I've got a random sample of the AC column. And it's a big random sample. It's 1/4. Usually random samples, you know, when you're doing statistics, you take 1 out of 1,000. When they're presidential polls, we got 1 out of 4. That's a huge random sample. And that experiment has been done. And I already told you what the answer was over here. AC, the AC column, when you do that actual experiment, you get an average of 0.707. And guess what? Those four angles are such that the same will be true of all these things. The average of our random sample here will be 0.707, which means the average of all the entries will be 0.707. And these numbers are, these angles are chosen to be such that that works for every column. The average of every column is 0.707. So what's K? What is the average of all the numbers? Every column averages out to 0.707. So what's the average of everything in the table? 0.707. What does Bell tell us? It can't be bigger than 1/2. K cannot exist. It would give a contradiction. How can K not exist? Table 2 can't exist. If table 2 exists, its average exists. That's a no-brainer. But K cannot exist. Hence, table 2 cannot exist. Oh, but table 2, that came right from table 1. Any idiot can take table 1 and fill in table 2. What do we conclude? Table 1 can't exist. What was table 1? Table 1 was Mother Nature's secret what-if table. Mother Nature doesn't know. Mother Nature doesn't know. If that photon didn't go through filter B, Mother Nature has no way of filling in the entry. Because if she could, we would get this contradiction. And that argument has convinced most modern physicists that Einstein was wrong, that pure chance does exist in the world. Okay? Curiously enough, Bell philosophically agreed with Einstein. He didn't like the idea of chance any more than Einstein did. He was never really happy with his result. Questions? It was so brilliant, you don't have any questions. This stuff is subtle, okay? I could go on for another hour showing you subtleties about it, but I won't. I hope that I have shown you that it is very easy. The mathematics is very easy. No integrals, no manifolds, okay? And yet you learn something profound from it. But the first time I read this, I was impressed. But I said, I don't really understand. I want to read it again. So I read it several times, different variants of it. And I'm now getting kind of comfortable with it, okay? I now do understand it. But even now, even preparing this talk, which I've given before, but a different version of it, even now I've got insights that I didn't have before. So, for instance, I'll just throw one out. Suppose, there's a question, do we have free will, or is the whole universe predetermined? Does everything that happens, is it predetermined? If that is true, then these experiments that gave us the average of 0.707, maybe they tricked us. Now, maybe this random business isn't really random. Maybe it was pretty true. Maybe there's a God. I'm an atheist, but maybe there's a God, and God is trying to trick us. Okay? And make it look like chance. So at least we learn, well, if things are predetermined, they are predetermined to look just like chance. Okay? So we cannot really say that chance exists. We can say either chance exists or there's the universal conspiracy trying to trick us into thinking that chance exists. So in some sense, that's the real conclusion. Okay. More questions? Well, that wasn't a question. I answered a question you hadn't asked. Okay, since we're waiting on pizza.
Okay, I think, let's just thank your speaker. I think pizza's upstairs.
Oh, pizza upstairs?
Yeah, usually.
Oh, well, what are we doing here?
Let's see your speaker.